Second part of session 100. Let's talk here about the great way of the mind, Thoreau archetypical mind. Let's begin. In the first part of this session, we covered the usual personal material, and now we're going to get into the last conversation that we get on the archetypical mind until, again, session 103. So, again, just a reminder that we're getting towards the end of the raw material or the raw contacts, and we are going to get sessions exclusively on personal material, which will still give us some insights as to the nature of service and all this vocabulary that we have developed, this model of reality through the Law of One. But the useful material that was given for spiritual evolution and so forth, it's going to end in session 103. Which again, I believe we're going to cover much more great way of mind, so we'll have to wait for that. And yeah, so we're going to get more into this now. In the last episode, the first part of session 100, I already covered also a little teaser on the great way of mind and also transformation of the mind, which is another question that was there. So now we're going to move exclusively into questions about the great way of mind, which is card 7 of the tarot and is the culmination of the mind cycle in terms of the tarot study, the first 7 cards. So I have nothing else to say but to begin with the first question I have, which is where we left the session last time. This is question 8. Don says, "The fact that the veil is raised higher on the right-hand side than on the left indicates to me that the adept choosing the positive polarity will have greater success in penetrating the veil." Woodrock comments, and before making that comment, I actually feel compelled to talk a little bit about the question 7. So let me do that. In question 7, they briefly talked about this, about the veil somewhat lifted, but still present. And this is because the work of the mind in third density, it's still ongoing. So it's not like the great way of mind signifies the lifting of the veil and some sort of graduation or something like that. It doesn't mean the culmination of a path, but rather a structure in which the mind now proceeds to continue to have experiences and, of course, aid in the polarization of the chosen path. So that's what it's representing. It's, I would say, like the gestalt of this, all these other cards. And I think that's what Ra mentions at some point. I forget if it's in the past or later on or even here. But it is an amalgamation of all of the other cards. And that's what it signifies, right? So we talked a little bit about that, and then we mentioned the veil, because there is a curtain, right? There's a veil or a curtain on top, and it seems to be lifted more on the positive side. And so Don says, well, the fact that the veil is raised higher on the right-hand side, which is the positive path, then on the left indicates to me that the adept choosing the positive polarity will have greater success in penetrating the veil. So is this true, that the positive entity has more aid, more success, more capacity to lift the veil than the negative one? And this gets into an interesting conversation about what it is that happens, let's say, in terms of identity with the entity. So let's see what Ra says. Ra explains, "This is a true statement if it is realized that the questioner speaks of potential success. Indeed, your third density experience is distorted or skewed so that the positive orientation has more aid than the so-called negative. So, a couple of things here. Let's just get into the practical meaning of the veil and the progression in one of the two paths. Everything is one being. Let's forget about the veil. There is no veil. There is only awareness of completion and unity, wholeness, no separation. Separation only exists to experience reality, to experience a universe, to experience a creation, a manifestation. But the feeling of connection, right? Our minds are all connected, and so we can see true separation. We only see the veiling of our unity, so we can perceive each other as entities, okay? That's conditions prevail. There is experience. Experience is not intense because we can see that we are all connected, and so no action is really important and no love is truly intense. But then the veil comes in, right? And it creates a higher, deeper illusion of separation. Now, because the veil is present, then my seeking or my desire for unity intensifies, because something inside me that I cannot understand is telling me that this can be real. You see, this doesn't come as an intellectual thought, although we can fashion it eventually, but deep inside I feel this, which we can define properly, and it's called love. So I have love, and love is transcending all separation, all differentiation between us and the universe and everything. There's just this feeling, this longing for connection, which we call love. So that's the positive path, see, is using this knowledge to enhance an understanding that is not easily conveyed in post-veiling conditions. That is the positive path, and that's why we have this whole archetypical structure to move towards this path. The more we use it, the more we see it. The more we see it, the more we live it. The more we live it, then the more we want to see, and so on. So it potentiates itself once it is chosen and it is expanded in its use as a way to inform our actions and behaviors and thoughts. So that's the positive path. The negative uses the veil, right? It's aware of the veil. However, it buys into the idea of separation. And so it starts to potentiate separation, and through separation, it obviously needs to create an image of itself, which it needs to strengthen and intensify in order to progress. So the progression here has to do with, well, what is the feeling of separation? The feeling of separation is control. So instead of love, which is something that comes natural, we need to devise this control to intensify the possibility to control things. First, you control yourself, and then you control others and situations and systems and so on. So, thanks to the veil, we can either intensify our seeking and thus our service and our love, or we can intensify the feeling of separation for the image that is created through the veil to live, first believe and then live through the process of separation, right? So that's the scenario, and that's what we see in the Great Way, whichever has been chosen, and then desire for further potentiation, increase, intensification, And that's what the great way is going to represent. The great way of mind is constantly moving towards that direction, empowered by the chosen polarity and moving with the rest of the archetypes in that direction. Either creating the separate self and solidifying it, or dissolving the idea of the separate self for unity, for the sense of unity consciousness, as we call it. So, Ross says that it is true that the positive path has more success because it has more aid, but as long as we see it as potential success, and it's not something, this is something that we discussed in the last question, question 7, where Ross said that this is not properly the work of third density to remove the veil, but rather to work through the veil. You see, I talked about this as a sort of porous structure of the veil, where the pores become wider and wider, and so we can see through more. Whereas the negative path uses the veil to validate the identity that it has created for itself and justify its actions towards the universe. First, it needs to validate its action for himself, and then towards others, and so forth through the universe, which is my view that in the model of the Law of One, we see negative entities as trying to control the whole universe, which is a foolish attempt, because if you were to control the whole universe, then wouldn't you be the whole universe? But negative entities can see that because they're still buying into the image of separation. It's only when they drop the image of separation where they can control the universe, but for that, you are already the governing force of the universe, which is what we worked from the beginning in the positive path. So it's a kind of foolish path in any case. But okay. They do say your third density experience is distorted or skewed so that the positive orientation has more aid than the so-called negative. Now, here's something that I see in this statement. Both positive and negative orientations have aid, okay, if they so desire, which, of course, they both want. The positive entity calls upon aid when says, I don't know, I want to see, you see, and then this kind of surfaces to the mind, new thoughts in this direction start to be informed by this knowledge of unity. And so the more it asks for it, it is available there. The resources are available. And the resources, let's call this angels, ancestors, whatever you want to call it, all these resources are pushing towards, of course, bringing truth to the mind. And yeah, it's like aid in the same direction. Whereas on the negative, you can see that there is also aid, but there is selfish aid. So if we talk about in terms of entities, imagine a positive entity helping another positive entity. That one just wants liberation, right? The one that is helping wants the other one to be liberated so it can see for itself. That's the proper aid of positive entities. Whereas on the negative is trying to manipulate the lesser entity that is asking for help. And so that's how I see it, that even though they do get aid from other negative entities, those negative entities also want to use them. And so the benefit that they can get, it's not so much the direct aid that they get, but rather the lesson of how I was manipulated so I can now manipulate others. And so it's sort of like a pyramid scheme, if you think about it. So you basically learn from how you were manipulated to manipulate others, and hopefully even manipulate your master. Whereas, you know, the positive path is about how to not depend anymore on your master, just to gain freedom. And the master's idea is for you to gain freedom from the beginning. So, you know, we have all these stories in Zen where the teacher or the master simply says, I have nothing to teach you. You see, that's it. If you get that, you leave and you're done. You don't need your teacher. But you insist, so the master is going to give you some nonsense to do. Sit down and meditate. Think about who were you before your parents conceived you and so on. All these koans. This is the difference in terms of aid. That's what I see. I would also say that the veil needs to be more present in the negative path, right? If I lift the veil or if I see through the veil, then I'm going through the positive path, whereas I need more veil on the negative path to validate my own image and the image of the world being separate from me. Hope that makes sense. Next question. Question 9, Don says, it would also seem to me that since Ra stated in the last session the limit of the viewpoint is the source of all distortions, that the very nature of the service to self distortions that create the left-hand path are a function of the veil and therefore are dependent, you might say, to some degree on at least a partial continued veiling. Does this make any sense? This is exactly what I just said. So Ra says, there is the thread of logic in what you suppose. The polarities are both dependent upon a limited viewpoint. However, the negative polarity depends more heavily upon the illusory separation betwixt the self and all other mind-body-spirit complexes. The positive polarity attempts to see through the illusion to the creator in each mind-body-spirit complex, but for the greater part is concerned with behaviors and thoughts directed towards other selves in order to be of service. This attitude in itself is full of the stuff of your third density illusion. So not only do we corroborate that, yes, I need wireless headphones. Not only do we corroborate that the veil is needed for negative polarization, of course, we can't lift the veil in third density and believe that we're going to continue as a separate being, because we will see things as they are. So I guess that's the difficult part of the negative path, that it needs to use the veil to such an extent in which it dilutes itself so much that it will continue on that ego or separate self, which is an image, it's just a thought. In a way, let me put it this way. This is a very simplified version, which I love, in the non-dual perspective of life. So in non-duality, we know that there is only awareness, okay? And awareness is moving as whatever it is, as an insect, as me, a human, as a rock vibrating, as water, as a planet. Awareness is simply moving, yes? But that movement is not what I am. Movement is what I do. But we can create the thought that I am the movement, I am the activity, I am the image. That is what the separate self begins to fashion. I am that. I am that movement. I am this image. I am this story. And if in the positive path, you're simply recognizing that you are that, which is everything, and in the negative path, you are potentiating the thought that I am this being, I am this entity. In the positive path, we see there is no entity, right? There is just awareness. There is just creation. And that's how we move between these two paths. So you need to have, of course, the veil to potentiate that, because As Ra says, the negative polarity depends more heavily upon the illusory separation between self and all other mind-body-spirit complexes. It doesn't get any more explicit than that. But we get a little insight into the positive path when they say that the positive polarity attempts to see through the illusion, so through the veil, to the creator in each person, let's say. This is important. When you look at somebody, you're going to see awareness, right? That's the creator right there. It's awareness behaving the way it wants to or the way it's used to. So if you see the person, the ego, right? When two egos get together, they don't get along. But if there is no ego, right, and you see the ego of somebody else as simply an activity, as something that is not real, then you're not affected by it. And of course, that other person is liberated by your mere presence. You see, that's huge. That is to see, as Ra says, see through the illusion to the creator in each mind-body-spirit complex, right? That is the attempt of the positive adept to see through the illusion and say, I know that's not you. You know, you're not going to convince me. And you indeed see a lot of people like this who approach you, and all they want to do is validate their ego. You know, they tell you their story and they tell you that they're needing this, or they are lacking that, or they hate that, or all of that is an act. And before, you might have said, oh yeah, you know, you're right, or no, you shouldn't be thinking this way. And now you just the story does not, you don't buy the story. You look at the person as a fiction, and you see the creator behind. And the more you can see that, the more you can help, right? That's the service. That's why Ra continues and says, for the greater part, the positive path is concerned with behaviors and thoughts directed towards other selves in order to be of service. So, yeah, this attitude is, in which way can my thoughts be of service to the creator itself, not to the ego? The ego is not something that is convincing to me. I no longer buy that you are this limited being, poor victim, and so on. And so it becomes impossible for you to participate in that narrative that people have. And so instead of saying, which is, I think it's a misconception of this, sometimes people get them literal and conceptual, and so they say, yes, ever since my awakening, I haven't been able to tolerate others' egos, so I can deal with them. You know, I'm in this spiritual bubble where I'm holy and so on, so I just can't tolerate people anymore. I have become so high, you know, in my achievement, my spiritual achievement, right? Well, that seems like a different ego there. No, that's not service. Sorry. I'm sorry to burst your bubble. Clever stuff always comes up. But yeah, that's not service. That's kind of just, you know, avoiding. You're avoiding because you're so high in there. And no, this has to do with how can your thoughts go through all that, you know, act and touch the heart of the person, you know? And you know this because you make them laugh, or you make them, you know, feel good about themselves, not about the ego, but about something that they're not seeing. Usually, you can see that the reaction here is like you have pierced. It's beautiful when we do this. You have pierced through their confusion and worry. And as you touch their heart, it's almost like they notice it, and they feel they feel like a child sometimes, you know. It's a childish reaction that they may kind of like laugh without wanting to admit that they're laughing, something like that. That's how you know that you have reached to the heart of the person and, you know, pierced through all of that act and everything else. It's not about, oh no, you're acting from the ego, you have to meditate, you have to, you know, you just need Jesus, man. It's not about that. It's about, you know, reaching to the heart of people. Or at least that's my view and my experience. Okay, so next question. Don says in question 10, the crown of three stars, we are guessing, indicates mastery and balancing of the mind, body, and spirit. Is this in any way correct? Ross says, this device is astrological in origin and the interpretation given somewhat confusing. We deal in this image with the environment of mind. It is perhaps appropriate to release the starry crown from its stricture. So, not much to say here. It's just a refinement of the card. It seems to have a starry crown. I'm not sure because I never studied the images, but okay, that's astrological. And again, because I don't study this, to be honest, I don't know why would Ra not even give a comment saying, oh, could be this or could be that. Maybe they didn't find anything of use and it was just fully astrological, so not needed. Sometimes they say that the artifact, the object, or the depiction of anything there can still be useful, but not this time. So again, just remove it. Don't pay attention to it. It is perhaps appropriate to release the starry crown from its stricture. So we get nothing. Question 11, Don says, the entities, the small black or rosette, reddish, and white entities have been now changed so that they appear to be sphinxes, which we are assuming mean that the catalyst has been mastered. I am also assuming that they act as the power that moves the chariot depicted here, so as this mastery enables the mind in its transformation to become mobile, unlike it was prior to this mastery, locked within the illusion. Would Ra comment on that? So here we get a clarification. Ra says, firstly, we ask that the student consider the Great Way not as the culmination of a series of seven activities or functions, but as far more clearly delineated image of the environment within which the mind, body, or spirit shall function. Therefore, the culturally determined creatures called sphinxes do not indicate mastery over catalysts. Okay. First, when Don mentions black or rosette, I have issues pronouncing stuff. My son always corrects me. So rosette is reddish color, and that's because they figure out a session or two ago that the original image was red, reddish color, and white, representing the negative path being reddish. So that's why Don says either black or reddish rosette. And he thinks that that's mastery over catalyst, which is not. Right? So Ra says that, okay, consider the Great Way. This is what I mentioned before. It's right here. Don't consider the Great Way as a culmination of a series of seven activities or functions, but a more clearly delineated image of the environment within which the mind, body, or spirit shall function. So I see this as the summary of your worldview. Okay, so the summary of your worldview is constantly changing. And I'll give you my example of what the Great Way used to look. It's like I'm going to extract the Great Way of my mind in 2018 or 17, and you know how it got it into that point, and then I'm going to show you mine right now. Let me try to illustrate both. my great way, the environment in which my mind was saying, this is it, you know, this is how the universe is, this is what I am, and I continue to feed this view. So my great way was materialistic science. Everything is made out of particles, and these particles, at best, you know, it's energy in movement. Everything else is space. Consciousness is created by the brain, and so on. So that was the great way of myself 6 years, 7 years ago. And that was it. It had been fed for decades of information that validated my view. There was a sense of, I mean, separation was just a given there. Everything is separated. There is no unity. There wasn't even a thought that all the universe is one, but rather that the universe was either expanding or will collapse, and there is no governing entity, there is no God. I should add in that I was an atheist too, so I didn't believe in God. There was no convincing evidence, obviously, that God exists. So that was the great way. My mind was potentiated constantly towards that belief. I wasn't very philosophical, so to me it was just like, okay, that's how life is, and that's how life behaves, so I'm comfortable. I wasn't nihilist, or I had no feelings towards this view. It was just, okay, that's the structure of things, and I have no other evidence. But I can see, and I see now, how this philosophical view of reality through materialistic science, or scientism, as sometimes it's called, can bring people into a sense of nihilism, which is characteristic, of course, of philosophy in the Western world. But yeah, I never suffer from that. So I guess, you know, that's a good thing on my limited viewpoint of the past. And it's funny because Don mentioned that same word or phrase from Ra, saying that the limit of the viewpoint, something, something, something. Right? Let's go back to that. Where did it say? The limit of the viewpoint is the source of all distortions. That's really, really filled with information, or understanding, rather. So that was the great way. Something happened. That great way was shattered completely. My whole reality was blown away by experience, by true experience that I couldn't deny. And that set me on the path of trying to understand then. You know, if it's not matter, then what is this universe? And so years later, of course, through my seeking, I found that, well, it is awareness. You know, it's not matter. My experience is undeniably aware. Awareness. And so that, again, I don't try to compress this, but that's the big realization. That's it. There's nothing mysterious, esoteric, or exotic about this. It's just changing your viewpoint from knowing, not believing, in what is your experience made of. Made out of, not what you believe it to be because of perceptions. So in any case, the great way changed into seeing reality from the point of view that, well, everything obviously is one because it's made out of the one thing. In the past, it used to be made out of one thing also, which is matter, but matter is dispersed, has no awareness, and is just random dumb forces that are working together, and suddenly awareness came up. Love is not present there, whereas from this viewpoint, this model, which is closer and more intimate to ourselves, then there is the view that, oh, well, awareness's quality is not dumb force, it's actually love, it's peace, it's interconnection, it's desired for what we call goodness, which is not really a polarity, it's just the nature of it. you know, to be kind, to be loving. And so that made a connection with my heart that finally said, yes, undeniably. You know, nobody can deny this. Nobody can deny this. Only those who, of course, are clinging to beliefs. Whether that be religious beliefs based on some spirituality, or scientific beliefs based on observation of movement or behavior of matter. So yeah, those are my two great ways, and that's how they change. But once you have it set up, it continues to go. It's not like it's settled. You continue to feed this with whatever inclination you have. How do you continue to live this model of reality? I hope that makes sense. Okay, so it's not the culmination of a series of seven activities or functions, but as a more clearly delineated image of the environment within which the mind, body, or spirit shall function. That means that it gets even more clear over time the more you feed this. And so in terms of separation or unity, if you keep feeding the validation and corroboration of separation, then you will live and create a more a rich environment of separation. And the opposite holds true in terms of unity. The culturally determined creatures called sphinxes do not indicate mastery over catalyst. Okay, that's the correction. It doesn't mean catalyst mastered. Ra continues and says, the second supposition, that of placing the creatures as the movers of the chariot of mine, has far more virtue. You may connote the concept of time to the image of the sphinx. The mental and the mental-emotional complex ripens and moves and is transformed in time. So the sphinxes represent movement or time. Both are the same thing, of course. We couldn't know objects if it wasn't for space. So if there is no space, there are no objects. If there is space, there is objects. But you wouldn't consider movement unless you see time. So space implies objects, or objects imply space, and movement implies time, or time implies movement. Simple. Time is what moves the mind. Time is what creates the illusion of progression. Yeah? So, it's actually very simple. I don't think there's much to say here. Of course, we're talking about evolution of the mind, progression, changes, and all of this. So progression, movement, change, they all imply time. So time is the mover. The mental and mental-emotional complex ripens and moves and is transformed in time, right? Yeah, that's just the nature of mind. Mind exists in space and time. Awareness does not. Although mind, of course, is made out of awareness. Okay, we're almost close to the end here. Question 12, Don says, there is the 45-minute signal. That means the cassette just ended on the one side. And Don says, does Ross suggest a termination of this session, taking into consideration the instrument's condition and all the other conditions that we have placed on this? Ross says, information pertinent to this query has been previously covered. The choice of termination time, as you call it, is solely that of the questionnaire until the point at which we perceive the instrument beginning to use its vital resources due to the absence of transferred or native physical energy. The instrument remains open as always. So, just another glimpse into the qualities of the contact, and that contact, of course, is not just Ra, it's Carla, it's Don, and it's Jim. And yeah, they're just saying it's your choice to continue on or not. We will continue until we see that there are vital energies. So the way I see it is that Ra was obviously aware of Carla's energies. They were looking at the battery, right? And so they would at some point say, okay, we're leaving because we don't want to kill Carla. Like, that's not something we want to do. But in asking about, you know, the condition, tell me how the instrument is, they will say, like they said here, the instrument remains open, as always. They're saying, well, the instrument gave us, in essence, full capacity for us to do whatever we want. But it is our choice always to leave when the vital energies are about to be used and definitely depleted. So they didn't want to cause extra harm to Carla, and much less to kill her or just deplete her of energies which will result in physical death. But it was Don's choice to, you know, end the contact at question five and say, you know what, 30 minutes is enough, I'm done with you, I'm gonna go do something else, right? That's your prerogative. So Ra is basically saying here, we still have energy, we can continue, but it's up to you. We're not gonna tell you when to stop, but we will tell you when we're leaving because we don't want to cause harm to Carla. Next question. This would be one of the last questions, or the last question before the last question. second to last. Only because I'm including the last question now as we come close to the end. Don says in question 13, in that case, I will ask only one more question, and that will be having to do with the sword and the scepter. It would seem that the sword would be the power of the negative adept, indicating control over other selves, and the scepter would indicate the power of the positive adept with unity in mind, body, and spirit. However, they seem to be in opposite hands than I would have guessed. Would Ra comment on that? Once again, Ra says, these symbols are astrological in origin. The shapes, therefore, may be released from their stricture. We may note that there is an overriding spiritual environment and protection over, rather for the environment of the mind. We may further note that the negative polarized adept will attempt to fashion that covenant for its own use, whereas the positively polarized entity may hold forth that which is exemplified by the astrological sword, that is, light and truth. So, okay. Was it a scepter? A scepter and a sword, right? Yes. So, first, they're both astrological in origin, but even though the shapes may be released from their stricture, Ross says that there is a couple of notes, right? They say that there is an overriding spiritual environment and protection for the environment of the mind. I believe this is the... right? They talked about this with the wings above this, right? And there are wings. I think there are some wings there. So there is an overriding spiritual environment, protection of the environment, I mean, and of the mind in this case, which is, I believe, to be the chosen view, worldview will be protected by, you know, if awareness sees us this way, then that's totally free will. So it's protected by that. I don't think there's anything too deep in this protection. It's just, that's what awareness wants to see. Then what else can be, you know, can influence it, if not itself, to see it in a different way? But then they note something else, saying that the negatively polarized adept will attempt to fashion that covenant for its own use. I always see, of course, the negative entity as using all available resources to empower a belief. And the belief, the root belief, is a separation of itself from everything else. And that's why Ra says the first separation is of self from self, effectively creating an image of self. You can have an image of yourself and still be who you are. It's not possible. You need to extract yourself out as an image and then see yourself as that. That's an illusion. That's not true. So I see, of course, the negative entity using that. Any resource that is available in the mind will be used to validate this because it wants to continue believing on it. Whereas the positive polarized entity will hold forth that which is exemplified by the astrological sword, which is light and truth. So instead of distorting and deviating light and truth, as the negative will do, they just wield it as what is. You know, that's the power. The power of truth is enormous. You know, make us feel uncomfortable sometimes, but well, we have to be able to hold or withhold the power of truth, or light, as they call it also in the raw material, which is the prerequisite for graduation and so on, the capacity to sustain the impact of light or truth. That's why it's trained here. If we are able to sustain truth as it is, more and more and more, hint, acceptance, then the more we're able, obviously, to have higher experiences. Okay, let's move to, I lied, this wasn't the last or second to last question. It was a very short one here, but it'll lead us to the next one. Question 14, Don says, would there be two more appropriate objects or symbols to have the entity in card 7 holding in its hands other than the ones shown? So can we substitute the scepter and the sword for something that is more appropriate? And Ra says, we leave this consideration to you, O student, and shall comment upon any observation which you may make. So you want to put a toy car, or you want to put a stuffed animal, and then we comment on it. Whatever you want to put in there, you do it. Then we'll comment. Last question, in which we finish. Don says, I will save that for next session, and hint, he doesn't. And I will ask if there is anything we can do to make the instrument more comfortable or improve the contact. Ra finishes the session saying, all is well. The appurtenances are most conscientiously placed. We thank this diligent group. There is much greater distortion towards harmony at this asking, and we join you in praise and thanksgiving. This is always the greatest boon to improvement of the contact, for it is the harmony of the group which supports this contact. I am Ra. I leave you in the love and the light of the One. Go forth, therefore, rejoicing in the power and in the peace of the One Infinite Creator, Adonai. So, towards the end here, we see that they were apparently in much more harmony than before. That's what Ra noticed and said, this is the greatest boon to improvement of the contact, so continue on with this. You're doing great, basically. And yeah, that's basically it. Conclusions. So in I guess the revision here is to know that the great way, the way I see it, is the structure in which we see reality. Every catalyst that comes to our mind, there are only two paths. It's important to know this. There are only two paths. If you explore, obviously, the positive path, I'll only talk about the positive path here. If you explore it and you begin to see what is it made out of, there is peace, there's harmony, there's joy, there is love, and everything else that we can define out of the positive path, right? The path of truth. You say, well, everything that can help in this direction must have those qualities, must contain all of this. If not, if on the contrary, I still harbor and contain behaviors, thoughts against myself and against others or situations or simply rejection of these qualities in the presence of people, situations, my own thought environment, then of course that is not in accordance with my selected path. We need to purify, so to speak, these thoughts. This is what A Course in Miracles will call atonement, right? The atonement is simply that, is the purification of these thought patterns that are not consonant with the law of one, with unity, with Jesus, with the way. That's basically what it is. The more you do that, then your great way of mind continues to change and transform. Now, believe me that there is no ideal structure of reality, but the structure of reality individual to you can be further enhanced by the seeking and desire to manifest this view, this understanding. And that's why Ra says that, of course, you know, it's more concern. We are manifested here, so we're here to give, to provide that, to be a channel for that truth. And so that's how the great way, the structure of the mind, in terms of its path, is further developed or transformed, as Ra says. It's very simple. How do you do that? Well, like I said, you first need to corroborate that this is the true path for you. Intellectually, you have been validating it over and over again. Then comes the part of practical, getting that into the heart of experience and seeing, yes, this is it. The more you get in touch with that direct experience of what is, then the more it's going to manifest through you. And that, of course, takes the whole cycle of the mind in consideration. And I won't go through all of that, but you can see if you have created some sort of illustration, mental illustration, as to what the cycle of the mind does in the archetypical mind, then you can see that all of it is working towards improving, enhancing, expanding this view of unity, of what does unity feels like, not what does it mean, how does it feel like. And the more you get with that feeling to the heart of experience of unity, then the better it's going to manifest in your environment, in your great way, the structure in which experiences filter through will continue to improve and I would say even highlight more those qualities. The most effective way to do this, to me, in my understanding, is to abide in the understanding that what you are is awareness. And that awareness, what is that awareness? Investigate that over and over again. Get in touch with it and know what it is. That's why I'm so passionate about this particular path, which is the direct path into self-realization, which is simply knowing who you are. And it just goes through you. There's nothing to be added to it, but just to experience it. And that experience exudes through you. So that's all I have today. We finished session 100. Like I said, session 101 and 102 are going to be personal material before we go back into archetypical mind. Thank you so much for being part of this path, as I usually say. I hope you're well, and with nothing else to add, I bid you farewell, stay well, and I'll see you in the first part of session 101.